Well, shalom, and welcome to another two, actually 3 hours of Jewish soul music. I'm your host, Charlie Bernhout. By now you're aware of the sad passing of our friend Bensian Shenker a week ago, and this program is dedicated to his memory. The first 2 hours, I will be playing an interview that I did with Bensian 22 years ago. That was on May 29th, 1994. Keep that in mind, because there'll be phone numbers given out and so forth. It was at a time when I had a two-hour program at Seton Hall University, Don't be confused. I didn't want to edit that out. Once I start editing, it gets to be a real hassle. I think if you're a fan of Bensian Shenker, I'm sure you'll enjoy this. And if you're not that familiar with him, you should really listen to his voice, his soul music, and I'm sure you'll become a fan of his. In the discussion on the third hour with Velvel Pasternak, he mentioned that unfortunately it was just the Hasidic world and even a small part of the Hasidic world that really had a great familiarity with Bensian, particularly among the Mojitzers. I mean, he was a Mojitzer, and the albums are Mojitzer Nagunim, and we need to get the music out there to the non-Hasidic world. And certainly, if you have any suggestions, or if you want to step up to the plate and partake in something that will help to perpetuate the legacy of Bensian Shenker, you know how to reach me at cbjmusic@aol.com. In any event, let's get right to that program from 22 years ago. And this will be the first hour.
Kotzala verina si foseinu osteranina Kotzala verina si foseinu osteranina Kotzala.
Good evening, welcome to another 2 hours of Jewish Soul. This is your host, Charlie Bernhout. Each week we bring you the best in cantorial, Yiddish, Israeli, and American Jewish music. We come to you from WSOU at Seton Hall University in beautiful South Orange, New Jersey. And many of you will want the phone number to call in to say hello to our special guest this evening. He's singing in the background, and of course it's none other than Bensian Shenker. Let's go back to Kol Tzahola, and we'll be hearing from Bensian in a couple of minutes.
Seino osteranina calza alla perina se poseino 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 osteranina oiana nashem oiana nashem oishiana ana nashem aslihana oiana nashem oiana nashem oishiana osteranina calza alla perina se poseino osteranina calza alla perina se
strane man.
Kajsa hallo, pellerino,
se fossei no a strane man. Poiano, no Hashem, poiano Hashem, oishiano, hono.
Beautiful. That's a foreshadowing of what's to come during this hour. Good evening, Vince Ianshanker.
Good evening.
I'm so honored and proud to have you here in the studio with us.
I'm honored to be here.
Well, there are so many of our audience who are great fans of yours, as I am, and this is certainly a special 2 hours that we're going to be listening to your music and hear a little bit about your life and how you became interested in music, and why don't we get right to it? I understand you were born in Brooklyn, so how does a Brooklyn boy get involved with Hasidic music in the 30s?
Right. Well, it started actually with synagogue music before the Hasidic music. As a child, well, I always showed a lot of musical promise or...
You were a wunderkind? Were you one of those?
I don't know if I can call him a wunderkind. Uh-huh. But I did sing in a synagogue choir.
Where was that?
That was in Brooklyn. Uh-huh. The choir leader and also cantor, he was both a choir leader and a cantor, was at that time a very popular person by the name of Yeshua Weiser. He was a prolific composer. He wrote a lot of chazanas. There are many books that he has published of chazanas, and he was also a teacher of chazanim. He had like a private school where he taught chazanim. Uh-huh. As a child, it seems he once attended the shul that we attended, our family, and he heard me sing, and he was very, very excited, and he told my father that he'd like very much for me to join his choir as a alto soloist.
Right. He didn't kidnap you, as
no,
I hear they used to do in the old days.
Not exactly. Yeah, that was after the Lindbergh case, I think that was out. At any rate, I remember joining the choir, coming to rehearsals, and he wrote solos for me. Some of them were actually written for my voice at the time. I had like sort of a mezzo alto, not a high alto. Mm-hmm. And I also possessed a coloratura, which was very unique for a young child. And he used to go crazy over it.
Now, we don't have any recordings of those. I know we have one.
I do have a recording. I made that when I was 13 years old.
13, uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, we did play it once before, and I understand we're going to be playing it.
Yes, yes. In fact, Weiser composed a song that I sang there, the Alte Chazan, which was recorded by many chazanim after that.
Yes.
And he also accompanied me on the piano at this recording, which is also something unique.
Yes.
I actually sang in his choir until I was about 15 or 15 and a half years, until about 15. And as my voice kept changing, he kept writing the solos and different keys, you know.
He didn't kick you out.
He didn't want to kick me out. He wanted to keep me going.
Right.
Yes. I remember one distinct thing that I remember very vividly was the first concert that we sang. It was, I believe, there was a shul called the Pennsylvania Avenue Talmud Torah in Brownsville.
Uh-huh.
And this was a concert that I believe there were four chazanim there. I'm trying to remember the names. Now, one of them was David Reitman.
Wow.
And he was at that, this was, we're talking about 1938 now,
mm-hmm.
or maybe 37 possibly. He, at that point, I think, was on his way down. I believe he was an elderly man already. But he still presented a nice program. And there was another chazan by the name of Kretschmar. I don't know, did you ever hear
I have his,
you have
recordings,
his recordings,
yes.
There was also chazan Kachko.
I have Kachko also.
Kachko, yeah. Yes. They're all three, and Weiser. Weiser led the choir, and and sang also, I believe, and they each sang solos with the choir. Now, we did a piece of Hallel where I did a solo for Mikimi. That was the first piece of Hallel. And that was the first time I sang with the choir. It was very interesting. And I was very short, and I was put on a pedestal, you know, and
yes.
And everybody sort of got up, you know, trying to see who's this kid that's singing over there. And one of the people that got up was David Reitman. He got up and took a square look at me, like, you know, and really gave me a good
look over. Right.
And then when the concert was over, he walked up to the choir stand, you know, and said, Shike, that's what he called
Shaker.
The wife. Shike Weise, he says, Werde Ingels are gesing. Who's this little boy that sang? So he points to me. So he comes over and he says, gives me a big, you know, knip in the beckle, you know. And he says, oh, du sollst wachsen, Kehle. You're going to grow up to be somebody. He says, that was my first encounter with
him. He had the great foresight.
Well, and I always remember this incident. It was really something.
Now, I recall around that time, just a couple of years after, the Mojisser Rebbe came to this country.
Yes, that was 1940.
Now, how did you make contact with him, and that he had such a great influence on you? I mean,
yes.
Were you involved with Mojis before?
Not really, but my father was a Polish chassid. Mm-hmm. In other words, he knew very much of Mojis, because actually my father's town wasn't too far from Mojis. In fact, I think that my father's town had people that were married to people in his town who came from Mojis. So he had that exposure to it. I remember the Rebbe arrived, I believe, like Wednesday during the weekend. Friday night he conducted a tish. You know, Rebbe conducts a tish,
right,
in one of the shuls in Williamsburg at the time. That's where he made his residence, in Williamsburg. And we didn't live in Williamsburg. We lived like sort of in the outskirts, Bedford-Stuyvesant. I don't know if you know Brooklyn.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an old real estate boy.
Yeah.
I
remember our shul... We had a lot of Polish Jews that attended our shul, so we all decided to walk down to the Tish. And this was, must have been at least 15 or 20 people that walked down for about a half hour or so.
In those days, you didn't have to worry about walking on the streets.
No. we all attended that Tish, and we were all very inspired. It was very friendly. First of all, you know, the Rebbe came, was a refugee. He was escaping.
Escaped,
he had just escaped from the Nazis.
Yes. How old was he about?
At that time, he was, I believe, 54.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although he looked much older. He has gone through quite a bit at the time. His beard was completely white. I mean, he looked much older. And I remember being very inspired by that particular Tish. But there was no contact, really, at that point. About 2 months later, the Rebbe was invited to a shul in our neighborhood, in Bedford-Stuyvesant.
Uh-huh.
So there I became very, very friendly, very Hamish. And it's interesting, my father was invited to eat at the meal in the home that he was staying.
Uh-huh.
Whereas we were children, myself, my brother, we were young children, so we were told to go home and make Kiddush for my mother and come back, you know. And when I came back to the Saturday afternoon at the Tish, the Rebbe was sitting in the dining room there, and with the minion, let's say, and there was I noticed a book in back of him on the couch, a book that was called La Chassida Mizmar, written by somebody by the name of Bishuri, an Israeli writer. And there were notations of melodies, some Mojis melodies, some other melodies. And I just, as I was... leafing through the book, I just started singing it. I was able to read. And the Rebbe just couldn't get over it. He says, oh, little pipsqueak over there. And he reads as if nothing ever happened. So he says, let me hear. So I kept going on, you know.
Yes.
And he was so impressed. He says, where did you learn how to read that way? So I said, well, I was studying with Weiser at the time. I was studying with someone else, with Seymour Silberman. I don't know if you know.
Yes, of course.
You know, I'm sure you know.
Recording.
Him.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
He wasn't much older than I was at the time, but he was teaching at the time.
He's still in Great Neck.
Sure.
Yes. Sure.
Yeah. He was teaching at the time. Uh-huh. He taught me theory, piano,
really?
And everything else.
So he heard.
And the Rebbe heard
you,
this, and
yes.
He told me to keep on singing. And he was so impressed that And this is really was my first contact with Mudgetts. And of course, later it was a very close contact because I used to notate all of his compositions. Mm-hmm. Rebbe was not did not read or write music.
Just did you record it and then?
There was no such thing as recording at the time. There was
so
no
you
tape
had to
recorded.
Do it strictly by ear.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, I used to listen and I used to.
Fantastic.
In fact, I was responsible for Weiser coming down to the Rebbe and notating some of the very complicated pieces that he had. Weiser did a lot of. Weiser later included in some of his books.
Mm-hmm.
There were quite a few pieces that were included in his books.
That's fascinating.
Yes.
We'll get back to more on the next stages with your recordings, but right now we have set up to hear, I believe it's, is this the Yiddish selection?
The Yiddish selection, yes, that I recorded when I was 13 years old, and this is Weiser's Der Alte Chazan.
Okay, and this is really a classic now. I think we played this, we did play this, a couple of years ago, and but it's new for most of
it
us.
It was recorded in a studio on Second Avenue, and Weiser, who was the composer of the piece, was also my accompanist.
That's yeah. Great. Okay. Coming right up, this is Bensian Schenker at the age of 13.
I love you.
That was fantastic. Going back to 1938. Wow, that's real history.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned to you that Weiser had a very interesting choir. I mean, among the people that sang in the choir was also a fellow by the name of Richard Tucker.
Richard Tucker.
And he got his first start in Chazonis, I believe, with Weiser.
Really?
Yes. I don't know whether he studied any place else after that, but that's where he got his start in Chazonis.
That was Cantor Weiser who was playing the piano for you.
Yes.
Fabulous. Yeah. If we only had more sophisticated recording equipment today, everybody records their children and their grandchildren.
Right. I wish I would have recorded more of myself at that point, because I really did very little.
That was magnificent. Mm. What do you have on board for next selection?
I did let's put it this way. Weiser once told my parents when I came into the choir and when he was try to tell him what he expects of me. He said, well, no, he's going to grow up to be a Pinchik. That was his way of saying, you know, I'll probably be a great cousin someday.
Right.
Which is not true, of course, but anyway. But tried to emulate Pinchik to a certain extent, and I did hear him live. I heard him at least once, I remember, and he sang Rosa de Chabas live, besides the fact that, of course, everybody hears it on the recordings.
Yes.
So in the 50s, I recorded Rosa de Chabas for myself, not for publication.
Okay.
But I have it over here.
Okay. So this is a not professionally recorded,
right.
but taking a recorder at your home, and we're forewarned.
Right.
And this is Pinchik's version?
Pinchik's Rosa de Chabas.
Rosa de Chabas.
Акрулина!
We're getting our recordings straight. That was You at the ripe young age of about 27, singing Rosa de Chavez as Pinchuk's Rosa de Chavez.
Correct.
And now, you had such a beautiful voice at that time. Why didn't you go into Chazonis? I mean, I guess you have to be crazy to go into Chazonis. Yeah, I know the answer to that, but I'm curious. You must have had a lot of pressure to do that.
It's true, but I never really wanted to make Chazonis a livelihood, put it that way. I never wanted to make a livelihood out of music, period. This was actually only a hobby as far as I was concerned. And when you go to Chazonis, you certain restrictions. I mean, davening in Chazonis, there are many restrictions. Really, you have to repeat words, which we don't do in our group. You know, there are many different things that they're not completely according to the halacha.
So you like being a free spirit,
right?
By the way, that's one reason why I love doing the show. Some people say to me, "Why don't you?" Do a commercial radio show, which every once in a while you say maybe, but then you're restricted. Here, I have such freedom, and I'm so grateful.
And
to
you're enjoying yourself.
Yes.
Because once you do it as a profession, you're not really enjoying it anymore. You know.
Well, hopefully some are, but you and I know. Well, it's a wonderful thing to be able to pursue something that brings so much joy.
Correct.
And, of course, all your albums, the joy of the festivals and the joy of Shabbos and so forth, they have brought so much joy to all of us. Now, this first album, which I have it here in my hand, which I understand is a collector's item, Mojitzer's Malava Malka Melodies. And I see that the arrangements were by Herbert Rothgarber,
yes.
Piano accompanied by Elliot Birnbaum and Stamler from... Collectors Guild was the technical director on that. This was your first album.
True.
Tell us about, about
it. See, we never really thought that we can come out with an album. I mean, it was like at that point, you know, there was very few recordings of, especially of Hasidic music. There was nothing at all, in fact.
Uh-huh.
That was really, ours was really the first try at it. Benedict Stambler was also a neighbor of mine on... in Crown Heights.
Uh-huh.
We lived at that point in Crown Heights. And we had a Mojitzer shul or shtibel in Crown Heights. And he used to come in like as a sort of innocent bystander, you know. He used to come to Shalosh Shudas, the third meal.
Mm-hmm.
And he would sit there every Shabbos. There was a guy sitting there and just listening and singing along and never identified himself. And we didn't really know who he was. But he was really a neighbor in the... I mean, not too far from where we were... where I lived or where I davened.
Uh-huh.
And then one day, after about a couple of months, he comes over to me after Meyerov and he says, you know, you have such beautiful melodies you sing here. Why don't you record them?
This is Stambler?
Stambler, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I say, you know, it's true. I mean, we would like to record them, but we have no way of doing it. We don't know how to go about it. So he says, I have all the know-how. I mean, as far as that goes, I know exactly what to do and where to go and I have... And together with his wife, he's not alive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
His wife still is. In fact, his wife writes a column for the Jewish Week.
Oh, really?
Yes, I remember. I remember her
under the name of Stamler.
No, she has a different name.
Oh,
now. She's remarried. She lives in Florida.
I see.
Yeah, I can't recall the name right now.
Oh, because
in fact, I did contact her recently because I was looking for something which I thought maybe she would know about, and. We listened, and then we got, as time went on, you know, we started listening more seriously, and we started rehearsing. You know, first we had to pick the melodies, and then we started rehearsing. He took us into a rehearsal studio at one point.
Now, how many were in the choir? There was a whole group here.
There was a group. I think they're all listed there, in fact.
Uh-huh. First,
yeah. In fact, one of the people in that choir was Velvet Pastek. I don't know if you realize that.
No, I didn't. I didn't realize that. Yeah, and I hope he's listening. You know, we called him from my car on the way here.
Yes.
Velvel, why don't you pick up the phone and call us?
Yes, he was one of the singing. I mean, at that point, he was still studying in the YU, and he davened in our shul, in fact.
Really?
Sure.
He lived in Crown Heights,
sure.
Oh, yeah. How about that?
He was a Hamish boy.
By the way, Velvel, the phone number here is 201-761-9768. That's 201 761-9768. If you're listening, give us a call. Mm-hmm. So he davened with you in,
with us, and he was a part of the choir. And then, of course, later, when we did some of our other ventures, he was actually the conductor of the choir. He wrote some of the arrangements, choir arrangements. Sure, on our Margins of Favorites, he was already working as a...
Yes, you see his name on all of these recordings. As a matter of fact, if those of who are into Chazonis or into Jewish music know that Velvel is a one-man music man for the Jewish people. I mean, mm-hmm. He has published so many books on Jewish music.
Yeah, he has,
and it's for posterity, really. Right. He has a mission. You know, he has a sense of mission.
He has a lot of my compositions in his books.
Yes,
occasions of, yes. In fact, his father, who just passed away the past year, was close to Mudgetts too, from Europe yet.
Really? Yes. You know, so, as we hear, it gets closer and closer.
It's all one little
yes.
family, you know.
Yes.
We did this Mlava Malka in 1956, that was. And it took a long time before we came out. We were able to actually go down to the studio. You know, we were all amateurs.
Right.
And, I mean, although we all sang well, but, you know, it has to gel. And I remember we were rehearsing in at my home or in the home of some of the other members. And that's after the record, after I think we started, from the time we started until the time we actually produced the record, I think it was almost a year.
Uh-huh. Well, this really was a forerunner of the great wave of Hasidic music.
It was
music
a breakthrough because really this was the first Hasidic record that ever came out.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, later Kalbach came and then Lubavitch and then Ger. I mean, but that all mm-hmm. followed, you know.
Now, this piece that we're going to hear is something that you composed in 1943.
Correct, yes. One of my very early compositions, and I recorded it on this record. For Hamavdil.
Hamavdil. Okay, so let's hear from the first album, Mojitzer Mlava Malka Melodies, that was published in 1956, written in 1943 by Cantor Rabbi Bensian Schenker.
Oh!
That's beautiful. That's historic.
Historic, right.
By the way, we were talking on the way here that I was bemoaning the fact that there is very little Jewish programming for the Jewish community in terms of radio. Of course, there's nothing in television, virtually nothing. And you were pointing out that when you were young, you used to sing on Jewish radio.
Correct. I used to have a weekly program, 15-minute or half-hour program. I don't remember myself. but I used to, there were at that point, there were many Jewish stations.
Uh-huh.
In fact, there were most of them were located in downtown Brooklyn. I think
where else? Where
I think there was the Fox Theater or something.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember Fox Theater? There were a couple of studios in that building there.
Uh-huh.
And I used to it's very interesting. I attended the MSIFTA at the time, and I was in my first class of the high school.
Right.
And my Rebbe at that point was Rabbi Palm, who is now the Rosh Yeshiva of the MSIFTA. And when I meet him to this very day, he always reminds me, he says, do you remember, he says, when you used to go out of class at 10 o'clock Sunday morning and come back 11:30 after you sang? I would used to leave the class at 10 o'clock.
That's great.
And then about 11, I would take the trolley, you know, from Williamsburg to downtown Brooklyn and do my little stint there for 15 minutes or whatever it is.
That's great.
And come back to school after.
we should only have recordings of the
I wish
the
they
late
were recordings.
30s, yes.
I wish they were recordings. I at that point, I used to do a lot of Yiddish songs, a little bit of Chazonis.
Uh-huh.
And it was really Wiser that would prepare me for these radio programs.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now today I got a report that from several people that in Morristown at the Rabbinical College they had a magnificent gathering for the Renaissance Fair, and Avram Fried was the lead singer, and my friend Arne Young and others have told me that it was a wonderful, wonderful day, a great crowd, and the music was wonderful. This is the first time that I had to miss it. I had to make a choice. And my wife went out this year, so that's why many of you didn't see me there. But I'll be there, God be willing, next year. Now, the reason we're talking about Avram Fried is that our next selection will be Avram.
A version of Avdil, which is sung by Avram Fried.
But was written
it's
by...
It's
your version.
It's the same composition, of course.
And for those of you who are at the college, let's hear Avram Fried one more time tonight.
All the power of one.
That's a beautiful version of your selection, Hamavdil. The Joy of Sabbath album came out, I see, in 1965.
1960, I believe.
Well, okay, and but one of your selections that you wrote in honor of a young woman who is sitting next to you, and let's dedicate it to her.
Eishes Chayil.
And this is,
I think this is a melody that has become very, very popular. I mean, I very often go home from Shul Shabbos Friday night, uh-huh. and you know, you pass many open windows, especially this time of the year,
yes.
and you hear from different houses people singing Eishes Chayil. And you know, when I walk past and I hear this, it's a big source of pride, you know.
Certainly, and I'm very pleased that your wife is here so that we can dedicate it to her.
Last week we attended a wedding, and it seems that this has become a sort of a tradition now by the weddings where the boys of the yeshiva sing Eishes Chayil for the chosen kala.
The serenader,
right. You know, in the middle of all the dancing, they just stop. And they all start singing Eishes Chayil.
And they give you a break from all that loud music someday. Right. That's great. So let's hear this magnificent version from the Joy of the Sabbath album. This was a chorus conducted by Velvel Pasternak, and I see that the musical settings were by Vladimir Heifetz.
Correct.
Eishes Chayil coming.
Eishes Chayil mi yinitzu Vrachayk mi pnimim mi chero Botach ebolei vepalo Ay vishonol lo yechisam Olasu etoim v'lo yiro kol imecha yeyo Dorisho tzemer ufishtim v'tas b'chefetz kapeyo Ois koni ois oichein mi merco che tu vir l'acmo a tu cammio ir l'aero a ti tintel bel fleveso di coi glinaro iseo zome mo sore vi dico che io mi pricapè io no to corre Hogi robi ois mos neiu From the Soras fesen Ali shoye no tsoy fiyo Ali khoyz beisu Plech matzilus Lohoy soy fey Om ova nenyo vi ashruo Palo Vi halelo Raboiz bonnois Osu khoyil Vi atoli Sale culono
Beautiful version of Esh Yisrael. Now you wrote this.
Yes.
And what happened to all these selections that you've written? I mean, are they in an anthology? We have the recordings, but if somebody wanted to perform them, I'm not sure.
Yes.
Where do they stand?
Well, many of these have been notated by Velvo.
Velvo Pasternak,
yes. Uh-huh. And he included them in some of his publications. I mean, those that have became very popular, of course. Esh Yisrael is there. And this next piece that we're talking about, Mizmor LaDavid,
uh-huh.
which became unusually popular throughout the ages. I mean, when I say the ages, I'm talking about since this recording. The Mizmor LaDavid was composed in 1946, and very interesting. I visited Eretz Yisrael, which was at that point was not called Israel; it was called Palestine,
mm-hmm.
in 1946.
Mm-hmm.
I accompanied my father, who wanted to see the country, and also wanted to see his brother, who he hadn't seen since he left for America in 1920.
Wow!
So, and this was his brother came to Israel in 1935. And this was 1946, it was after the war, and we started to rebuild. And we took that, I think it was the first ship that left New York Harbor for Palestine at the time. Nobody took a plane in those days.
Sure. Sure.
And I spent about 5 months in Eretz Yisrael at that time. In fact, I was contemplating remaining there to study,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't mm-hmm. pursue it.
Were you married at the time?
No, I was a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I accomplished being in Eretz Yisrael was to compose this following Mizmor LaDavid, which it became unusually accepted both in Eretz Yisrael and throughout the world. In fact, I very often hear somebody says, I was in Hong Kong and I was in Shabbos and in this and this shul and I heard singing Your Miserable David.
That's wild. Of course, this is the Lord is my shepherd, the 23rd Psalm. This is also on the Joy of the Sabbath album.
Right.
Let's hear Mizmor David. Mizmor LeDavid.
Charlie, I have to tell you a little story about this Miserable Dove. About 20 years ago, we visited one of the mountain resorts. We were there for a weekend or for a week or two, whatever it is. And Motzoi Shabbos, which is the end of the Sabbath, a few people organized a little get to get a little Malava Malka. And I joined them also.
Did they know who you were at the time?
People didn't know. People didn't know. Some did know. That's part of the story.
Okay.
Anyway, so they asked an older gentleman, asked him to sing something. He was most probably he was considered a menagin or a singer, and he sang this melody for something else, wasn't for Miserable Dove. And I just sort of helped him along, you know. I harmonized with him and so forth. Right. And right in the middle of the thing, he stops and says, "Junger Mann," he says, "don't make me mach nicht kalt, but don't spoil it for me." So if people around, you know, those that knew who I was, started laughing. He says, "Well, what's all the laugh about?" So he said, "He's the guy who composed the melody." He says, "I know this song 60 years already." This is a true story.
That's great. And I'm sure that's great. Well, look, we're approaching 9 o'clock, and we're going to be coming up to the second hour of 2 Hours of Jewish Soul. If you've tuned in late, well, by now you know that we have with us in the studio so pleased and proud that Ben Tzionschenker is with us, sharing his thoughts, his history, how he became involved with Jewish music. And during the second hour, of course, we'll hear more of his beautiful recordings and his thoughts on Jewish music. We're here at WSOU.
Okay, so as you could tell, that's a recording from 22 years ago, the first hour of the Ben Tzionschenker special. And stay tuned for the second hour, for the complete second hour of this special.